Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you so much to Chanduko for that news update. There'll be more news at 7 o'clock. We kick off this final show of the month of October with yet another weird law from around the world. This might potentially be the last weird law that we do. We might just start the month of November with something new. But if this is to be that law, it is the Three Generations Law of North Korea. It states that mostly for political crimes, one member of a family, if they were to commit a political crime, could end up being the reason that three generations of that bloodline is punished for that particular crime. Now, it is mostly enforced, as I said, around political crimes and follows the basis of inherited guilt. The policy believes that if the blood is guilty, then the descendants of that blood might also be guilty and be held accountable for that. I don't know if it's still being enforced because I haven't been to North Korea, but you're tuning into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the medical tax credits that are supposedly being removed or potentially being removed by the government. They're under consideration at the moment. We're going to look at the impact if they were to be removed and what we can make of that. We've also got a conversation taking a look at the importance of empowering South African entrepreneurs with the team at Standard Bank. They would be sponsoring the South African Future Trust Summit that will be taking place next week. We're going to take a look at that with them and get a sense of what that is about. Then we have a conversation with the team at Dis-Chem. We're going to speak to the Dis-Chem Chief Executive Officer around the first 6 months of the new financial year. And then we have a conversation with South African breweries taking a look at some of their alternative products beyond what it is that they offer the market traditionally. And then we're going to wrap up the show, as we always do on a Thursday, with a small business. We're going to be speaking to the co-founder and CEO of Evelectric. So stick around to find out what that business is about and what it is that they do.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we start off with a sense of how markets have been moving throughout the day and what has been moving markets throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by founder and managing partner at Herenia Capital Advisors, Pietri Redlinges, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Marmalade, lovely to have you on the show. As always, thanks so much for taking the time. I know you caught the big announcement by President Trump, because he made sure everybody caught that around the deal with China. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I think that I watched an interesting video where the two of them interacted with each other before the negotiations started. And Xi Jinping, well, President Xi, was very cold towards him. You know, Trump says, "Oh, hello, handshake," and there's like stone cold from President Xi. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot of cloak and dagger happening. China is playing a very different game. And yes, we'll make a deal. Everybody wants no tariffs. But I think that they're going to probably end up making a play for Taiwan eventually. I don't know. Tension is building, is that what I get. You know, Trump is sticking to his mandate, making America great again, fighting the tariff war, negotiating and all the rest. Fine, great. Not, you know, that's kind of the known at the moment. The way the market's reacting to this, you know, we're coming down slightly, not really going anywhere. Fair enough. We are trading at all-time highs in the S&P 500. But I feel that it's a very much a risk-off sentiment in the market. The rand's weakening. The Brent crude oil price, okay, it's kind of not really moving much. Gold price back up 1.5%. Equity markets not really going. Our market down a little bit. So all that risk-on sentiment we saw of money flowing into emerging markets, sort of, you know, feeling very bullish, it feels like that's a bit of trepidation. And the market isn't entirely convinced that, you know, a deal with China is the magic bullet that's now suddenly going to save us, right?
Pietri, how much of this takes into account yesterday's Fed decision by Fed Chair Jerome Powell to cut interest rates in the United States by 25 basis points? We know that a lot of interest rate decisions get baked into or priced into the market a lot sooner than when they happen. But we also have seen that the market has grown increasingly more sensitive towards these decisions, especially under the Trump administration.
Yeah, I think it's been a bit of a tool that is losing its sharpness, if you will. I mean, the truth is, the expectation was for interest rate to be cut by 25 basis points, and that's exactly what happened. So, it was baked into the pie already, as you said. However, I don't know. I mean, I think, like we've seen this many times in the past, the actual number is almost irrelevant. The deviation from the expectation is what is important. So, if it was down by 50 basis points, for example, we'd see a very strong reaction. If it was up by 25 basis points, we'd see a very strong reaction because there was deviation from what was the expected outcome. The expected outcome came in line, so it kind of passes as okay, well, we saw this coming, keep it moving. So I think that that's sort of really, the market is in a weird space. We've run really, really hard. We're approaching the end of the year. There's been a lot of good news that's happened. There's been a lot of bad news that's kind of been worked in. But on the whole, the big risk factors were the tariffs. That's mostly sort of been digested by the market now. The market expected rate cuts. We got rate cuts. So what left is there as a catalyst to get the market moving? I think the market just feels kind of stuck in a space where, we've seen very strong moves come from some asset classes. And it's like, okay, well, what's next? We need something to trigger the next sort of move in the market, right? For now, we're taking the cautious approach. I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. There's a lot of noise, or last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. There's a lot of noise in the market, lots of different sort of things grabbing for your attention. And we're just trying to say, okay, well, what is our thesis? What is our investment case? We want to be long energy. We want to be long cannabis in the US. These are our reasons, and we're kind of sticking to that knitting, and we're holding 22% cash because if the market comes down, we want money to buy with. So that's kind of our strategy at this stage. And there's a lot of confusion and stuff, but that's okay because that breeds opportunity for us. Right now, it seems as though, we're seeing potentially a last little bit of bearishness into a December run, particularly on the cryptocurrencies. That might not necessarily coincide with equity markets. Equity markets, I'm not ready to short the market, but I'm not really sure that I'm a buyer, just 0.5% from all-time highs either.
Pietri, what do we go into the December rally looking forward to? Because historically, there's the sell in May and go away. There's the quiet that we tend to sometimes see in August and September. This year, we've had none of that, which means then that we have run through those months. Do we have anything left to keep running into the month of December? Now, I know it's asking a lot of you to anticipate
Well,
what
okay,
the
so I'll
market's going
say
to
this.
do.
I'll say this, right? We know that there's a seasonal move that happens every December, the Santa rally, it's this thing that happens, most of the time. But that means there's a probability that some of the times it doesn't happen. We also know that we've had a very interesting year in the sense that every single month, if you look at a monthly data, monthly chart, every month has been green.
Including Liberation Month.
I don't remember that I've ever seen that. Okay, so that's unusual. Then we have what looks like a, like if you look at a candlestick, like candle chart analysis, it looks like a bit of a sort of a spinning top type candle. It's got a long wick at the top and a bit of downward pressure. And if tonight is down and tomorrow is down, then we could have like a monthly reversal candle in the making, right? I mean, if you're a charting guy, that's a short trade. So I don't know. I think maybe this year, woof, taking a risk, but maybe this year is the year we don't see Santa come to town,
Before Pietri Redlingace ruins Christmas for
right?
everybody, we're going to leave this conversation on that note. Thank you, as always, Marmalade, for the time and for the insights. Lovely having you on the show. Pietri Redlingace, founder and managing partner at Herenia Capital Advisors, sharing his thoughts on some market movements and perhaps what lies ahead for markets as we wrap up the year.
Time. When you're a kid, it moves slower than a sloth trying to get through airport security. There is just so much of it. Skip forward a few years to your 20s. Time is still your friend. It says have some balance. Go party and have fun. Then your 30s hit. And time suddenly steps on the accelerator like it's trying to catch a traffic light before it goes red. 40s. Now time is moving faster than your 10-year-old on a sugar high. 50. You're desperately trying to save as much as you can, but time is moving so fast. And all you can think is, where did all the time go? That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time for some much-deserved you time. Now, isn't that a compelling enough reason to invest? Ellen Gray. Long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
The festive rush doesn't wait. Orders, deliveries, messages, calls. This summer, you'll need connectivity that doesn't tap out when the pressure is on. With Telkom Business, you get reliable, high-speed connectivity for just $2.99 per month. That's our unlimited LTE, all-hours basic plan, 10 megabytes per second. No caps, no excuses.
This summer, your business deserves the best. Visit telkom.co.za/business for deals that grow your business. T's and C's apply. Telkom Business. Possible begins here.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The government of South Africa has recently made statements that medical scheme tax credits will be phased out, starting with high earners, to fund the National Health Insurance, to fund NHI. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the Managing Director for the Board of Healthcare Funders, Dr. Katlego Mthudi, who joins me on the line now to make sense of these statements. Dr. Mthudi, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's perhaps start with what has been said and what the potential implications could be for those that are part of medical schemes.
Yeah, good evening, Jim, and thanks for having us. I think that the first challenge is what has been said in various platforms. What we saw in the publications, according to parliamentary broadcast services, indicates that the department said that they would be phasing out medical tax credits gradually from, I think, the next financial year, to be completed over about a three-year period. But the same officials intimated through court documents that nothing in the short and medium term is going to happen. So the first point is really to seek clarity on what it is, because the removal of these tax credits has got huge implications for the medical scheme industry.
Dr. Mthudi, we'll get to those implications because I really do want to get a sense of what that could mean. But let's first take a look at just the impact of this on the medical schemes side of it. I mean, as the Board of Healthcare Funders, you represent more than 40 medical schemes and administrators, but alongside that, that is a lot more in terms of the amount of members of these schemes. And if we are to look at the implications of that in the context of the NHI conversation, we still haven't yet concluded what we're doing from an NHI perspective, have we?
Exactly. Maybe a bit of historical background. The tax credits were introduced around 2012. Prior to that, when you submitted your tax return, you would actually just indicate what the deductions were. But that system was actually deemed to be regressive, in that those people who spent more money on the higher options would get higher rebates. A more progressive system was introduced through the medical tax credits, where a flat rate was introduced. So you would have 364 rand for the main member, and the first dependent passed back to you. And then for every subsequent dependent, I think it's about 264 rand. What it meant was that people on the lower options actually benefited more, because when you calculate, it would be a higher percentage. From what we gather, if this system is going to be reversed, it would actually hit members on the lower plans, or the lower earning members, more than those who are high earners. In fact, an exercise that was conducted recently showed that from the, I think, 34 billion or so that is currently being given back to scheme membership, only about 2 billion rand is given back to people earning above a million rand. And that immediately shows you that the hardest hit people will be those who earn a lower earnings. And what that means, we did a projections, I think about a year or two ago. It indicates that close to 700,000 people could actually stop affording the threshold to enter the medical scheme market.
Dr. Muturi, we know that we have our midterm budget policy statement coming up in 2 weeks or so, and typically the government uses this as an opportunity to give us an indication of where they are in terms of what it is that they are thinking, and we know that that leads up to the main budget. I know that there's been a letter that's been written to the Deputy Director at National Treasury for some clarity. What are we hoping for from a clarity perspective is outlined by the government? I suppose part of it is exactly as you alluded to earlier, is that the court documents and the court statements differ from what is being put out in the public.
Yeah, I mean, there's the first point of departure, more clarity on what is going to be done. And secondly, if there is a phasing out, we want to know exactly how that will be implemented. And I think we have a very fragile economy right now. You saw what happened a few months ago when VAT was tinkered with. So every decision that has an impact on expenditure patterns of the citizens has to be considered very carefully. Now, on healthcare itself, if you are able to implement this, even if it's gradual, the impact on the entire health ecosystem would actually be massive. We know that at the moment about 15-16% of people access healthcare through medical schemes. Now, taking away the spending power of some of these people who are able to buy their own medical aid is just going to place a bigger burden on state. And we're not saying this from a selfish perspective, because we know that state cannot currently comfortably shoulder the burden of those who rely on it. We know that South Africans, even those who are not on medical aids, spend out-of-pocket money to actually access private healthcare. So it would mean that you are shifting more people to an already overburdened system. And taking in mind into consideration the department's own projection that implementation of NHI is going to take probably more than a decade, what we are saying is that we're implementing something now that cannot be relieved for at least another 10, 15 years.
Some very important considerations on the implementation or the potential impact of removing medical tax credits and how this would affect the medical aid landscape as it stands. Hopefully we get some insight and some clarity around how we move forward. But for now, we'll have to leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Dr. Muturi for those insights. Dr. Katlego Muturi, Managing Director at the Board of Healthcare Funders, joining us to take a look at medical tax credits. In a world where a lot can change in 6 years, you can rest assured that Hino's 6-year drivetrain warranty won't. All Hino trucks now come standard with a 6-year drivetrain warranty, protecting your investment all the way from pistons to gears. Built to keep your business moving, supporting uptime, growth, and daily operations. Because although a lot can change in 6 years, our warranty promise won't. Terms and conditions apply. Hino all the way.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot, steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. Next week, the South African Futures Trust Summit takes place in Johannesburg, and it is a summit that is aimed at encouraging and rewarding and recognizing small and medium-sized enterprises. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the sponsor of the summit for this year. That is, of course, the Standard Bank Business. So I'm joined on the line by the Head of Client Experience, Insights and Adoption at Standard Bank South Africa's Business and Commercial Banking, Felicia Singh, to take a look at this event and see what we make of it. Felicia, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about the partnership that Standard Bank has with the South African Future Trust Summit and why this partnership is so important.
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you so much for having me. So first, I think we're thrilled to be a headline sponsor for the SAFT Summit for the first time this year. The summit itself, it's returning for its third year in a row, and, you know, it gets bigger and better every year. So this year, we're expecting to draw in a crowd, I think, of about 3,000 people over the 2 days of the conference. And many of them are going to be entrepreneurs and investors that are looking for insights and for opportunities. So I think it's testament to the fact that the summit has really proven to be a really well-established and a leading platform for all businesses that are looking to grow in South Africa and in Africa. And in terms of the value that we derive from our partnership with SAFT, I think as like-minded organizations with similar objectives, we get to partner up and we get to use this incredible platform to help further that growth agenda for SMEs. So we're very proud to say that together with SAFT, we're creating opportunities for SMEs to access the tools and resources they need to unlock growth during the summit.
Now, Felicia, this goes beyond just the South African Future Trust Summit, because alongside that, you're also sponsoring the Women in Business Awards. Take us through just the importance of recognizing women-led businesses and encouraging female entrepreneurship.
A Women in Business Awards is actually, it's a category in the SAFT Awards, and the winners will be announced at the summit. So it's really exciting for us. And by the way, there's six fantastic categories in the SAFT Awards, so it recognizes different types of entrepreneurs. But we deliberately chose to sponsor the Women in Business Award with a grand prize of 500,000 Rand. And we chose this category because it celebrates women in entrepreneurship. It acknowledges the important role that women have to play as leaders. And specifically, I think it's a proof point. It shows that women who come from historically disadvantaged backgrounds, they can overcome the barriers that they face, and they can actually lead successful, thriving businesses. You know, SMEs in South Africa, we know that they're growth drivers. We know that they contribute around 60% of employment of the workforce, 30% of GDP. So these are the sizable contributions. And I think it just gives you an idea of all the potential that there is to do so much more. And that's why we see them as engines for growth. And I think by ensuring equal opportunity for women to enter into entrepreneurship and to lead businesses and actively participate in the economy, it will bring diversity. And diversity leads to meaningful change in the SME landscape, because when you bring in diversity, you introduce new perspectives to business, you drive innovation, you enhance competitivity. So all these things, I think, are absolutely essential for SMEs to grow and thrive, and women-owned businesses in particular.
Speaking of thriving businesses, Felicia, I want to take a look at just the emerging trends in the small business space, particularly in South Africa. I mean, South Africa has its own sets of challenges as an economy, but that also means then that small businesses have their own unique sets of challenges. Let's perhaps take a look at just what you guys are seeing in terms of some of the challenges, some of the trends, and perhaps how entrepreneurs can be better prepared for these.
Sure. So I think in terms of the key challenges that SMEs face in South Africa, those challenges are quite persistent. And I don't think it's unique to South Africa. But if I can name a few of them, I'd say the first one is access to funding. It's a big one. So how do entrepreneurs unlock access to much needed capital for their business? In order to grow businesses, we know need stock, they need equipment, they need vehicles, and so on. So how do they get funding to finance these expenses? And then the second, I would say, is access to markets. So how does the business tap into new markets? How do they expand borders? How do they access new business to drive their sales? Because sales growth ultimately is the testament of the business growing. And then the third, I would say, is access to capacity building for skills development. Business owners, we always say that to be an entrepreneur, you need to be a jack of all trades, because there's so many functions of the business, especially small business that you're running on your own. So business owners, they might be good at their trade, but learning to manage a business, it requires a different skill set altogether. There's financial management, there's marketing, you need to understand labor practices and so on. So where does the business get support to gain the necessary skills and knowledge? So I think those are the key challenges that make it difficult for businesses to get past the survival hurdle. But I also think there is always opportunity. So if I can just talk a bit about the opportunity, I think you know, for SMEs to unlock those opportunities, the advice I would give is, you know, firstly, they need to surround themselves with the right partners. So as an example, you know, what can your banking partner do for you? Does your relationship banker understand your business? Are they able to help you become credit worthy and funding ready? Does your bank offer products and services that can help you tap into new markets? Do they offer development programs or skills training that you could leverage? It's really important to understand, you know, your partners and your banking partner, what do they have that you could leverage? And then secondly, I think it's important for SMEs to also grab opportunities like the SAFT Summit. So when attending a platform like the SAFT Summit, it allows you to gain access to insights, to practical knowledge and strategies, and it exposes you to new technologies as well. And not to forget, you know, the networking opportunities. You might meet your next investor, or you might secure a big contract and become part of another value chain. So there's so many opportunities, and I think it's about looking at, you know, what can your partners offer you, and what opportunities can you seek for yourself through the platforms that are available, and that will help you address some of the challenges if you are an SME.
Seizing opportunities is the name of the game. And yes, folks, it's not too late to seize this particular opportunity. If you would still like to attend the South African Future Trust Summit that will be taking place next week, tickets are still available. You can still access them online, and you can still attend the summit next week. It takes place on the 5th and 6th of November, so next week, Wednesday and Thursday. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Felicia Singh, the head of a client experience in and adoption at Standard Bank South Africa's Business and Commercial Banking, joining us to take a look at the importance of future-proofing your business and the role that Standard Bank plays in that. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
At 7:05 this morning, Dis-Chem Pharmacies Limited issued their interim financial results for the 6 months ended 31 August 2025, the first half of their new financial year. We're going to be taking a look at these numbers with the company's Chief Executive Officer, Rui Moresh. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of the company's performance. Rui, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. The business started off the year in positive territory. I mean, looking at the group revenues growing ever so steadily, almost in a double digits there from a 6 month perspective. As the chief storyteller of the Dis-Chem business, how are you feeling about the first half of the year?
So I can give you the storytelling answer, or I can give you the chief executive answer.
I'll take both.
but for all intents and purposes, I guess they're the same. I'm feeling very positive about the momentum that's been created in the business. I think our income statement really tells two stories. It tells one of what is fundamentally really strong performance in our core retail engine. You know, so as I described in the presentation, 25% profitability growth in the core retail business, really coming from positive leverage, just the relationship between total income growth and cost growth. And then this concept of how we're thinking about the future, which is really moving away from being a retail healthcare provider, only a retail pharmacy, into an integrated healthcare provider, and really controlling and being both the funder and the provider into the healthcare space, and innovating the delivery of care across South Africa. Obviously, it requires investment with longer term ambitions around return, but it also creates a very important defensive moat around healthcare delivery from a retail lens in what is a very disruptable and ever-changing retail environment in South Africa.
Rui, we'll get into the capital expenditure in a bit. I want to get your thoughts around how you're seeing the market. Dis-Chem operates quite a wide network of stores across pretty much the whole country, and the business has one of the largest footprints in terms of floor space, not just product offering. That means that in some centers, you might even be considered an anchor tenant. How are you seeing the landscape, the retail landscape? How are you seeing the consumer market? And how is it informing the decisions you guys make?
So I think from a decision perspective as a brand, I mean, I think we play into what is a consolidating corporate pharmacy market, right? So in, for all intents and purposes, what that means is there's still a little bit of consolidation that happens as a function of corporates taking pharmacy market share from independents. And that's structural. It's happened in other first world markets like the UK and the US. And that underpins a lot of the ambition that corporate pharmacy has around space expansion. So you would have seen ourselves and our competitors, Clicks, for example, even MediRite, talking about space expansion and really someone who's not close to the market conditions or the market structures, structural market conditions, not really understanding what we're chasing down if the market's not growing. But essentially what is being chased down is this consolidation theme behind independent pharmacy. So that kind of underpins the way we think about space and the way that we roll out space. On top of that, I think there's a lot of new retail space that comes into South Africa every year. The type of space that's coming into South Africa is really convenient type space, you know, open air centers, you're not parking, you know, you can access specific retailing doors relatively easy from parking lots. And that evolution is moving away from the traditional type of super regional centers that are well cemented, have a good fashion offering. And I mean, we alongside of our competitors trade in all of them. A lot of new retail space coming into South Africa, you know, and aligned with the point that I made earlier, you know, it kind of drives our investment in space. But overall, I mean, the South African consumer remains very, very value conscious, incredibly value conscious, just as a function of how stretched they are. So those really would be, you know, kind of the three pillars that we assess each opportunity with and through.
Roy, you touched on the independent pharmacy network, and I mean, with the wholesale side of Dis-Chem's business, you currently support almost 85% of that independent pharmacy network. Let's look at the wholesale business for a moment and get a sense of how that is faring. I mean, you touched on the fact that the core business and the core retail business is performing really well. How's the wholesale business doing?
So the wholesale business has delivered incredible returns for, you know, for a compounded period now, you know, over the last 4 to 5 years. And the story behind wholesale has really been twofold. The penetration of more pharmacy doors in South Africa, independent pharmacy doors, as you described, you know, up now to 85% penetration of all independent pharmacies in South Africa. And then the ability for us to convert those independent pharmacies in some instances to the local choice brand, which is a franchise brand that we own. And on that conversion, we obviously get differentiated and an increased support in this in from the pharmacy in our supply chain, which has obviously supported that margin growth profile in the wholesale business. So the wholesale business has actually been a stellar part of the group and probably the superior business unit from a return generation perspective over the last 5 years.
Roy, can we take a look at the 288 million rand that's earmarked for expansionary expenditure within the group going forward? I want to get a sense of how it is you start to approach that from a capital optimization point of view, understanding that, of course, as you said, you operate across different business models and different footprint sizes, but at the same time, you need to be strategic in how you're deploying capital so that you get the most out of it.
You do. I mean, obviously, that's tied into our strategic pillars. So, I mean, our most important strategic pillar is property expansion, network growth, which means more stores, and that drives the majority of the capital investment that you described within the 288. Second to that is just how we're evolving ourselves from being a traditional retailer to a retailer that is data-led and innovative-led. So we've established our innovation hub called XBigly Labs. It's starting to deliver proof points like our Better Reward program, which is a fundamental reason of how rewards can drive certain behaviors within an ecosystem. It's started to inform how we think about promotional activity and how and what we select to promote. So that kind of innovation together with new space is really driving the capital deployment of the group and through a return framework, right? So there's a weighted average cost of capital that we carry as a group and we got to generate a return above that.
Roy, let's wrap things up with the Better Rewards launch that took place in the month of October. I know it's a very recent launch and doesn't necessarily form part of the first half of the year, but I want to get your thoughts around that. You touched on loyalty programs. You touched on rewarding consumers. That is very much in line with what Dis-Chem and other companies in your space are doing. How are you approaching the rewards conversation differently, understanding that you're in a very competitive space, number one, and number two, you need your rewards program to continue to stand out over and above what might be out there for consumers.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess this is when I draw on my chief storytelling abilities. But I think for all intents and purposes, and we are biased, but I mean, we do have a fundamentally differentiated and now the best reward program in the country. If you think about how the reward program evolves and what it opens up in value for consumers, I mean, essentially what we've done is we've analytically selected a basket of South Africa's most loved brands, 140 plus brands in South Africa that are shopped by every single consumer every single month. And by that, I mean, they represent the shopping basket of the many. We call it the many, you know, the many mass market South Africans. And how do we take these highly promoted items that exist across all retail channels in South Africa and kind of overlap a promotional mechanism that gives further discounts on that basket? So our base discount on those 140 brands, 10,000 items in our store, an additional 10%. All you need is a better reward card. If you were on our old loyalty program, our old loyalty program gives you access to that. And then there's specific boosts that sit on top of that, that encourage certain behavior. So for example, we have a pharmacy boost. So if you shop our pharmacy, if you bring your chronic script and drive adherence to medication and improve your health, if you shop over the counter and invest in preventative health, you open another 5% on that same front shop basket. So for all intents and purposes, the highly promoted nappy that you see in South Africa or the highly promoted roll-on or deodorant is now 15% cheaper when you come into our store and when you pay for it at the till. And then on top of that, if you pay with a Capitec card, which is our exclusive banking partner, there's a further 5% discount. So you're in theory getting 20% back on top of promo every single day, every time you shop, for the existence of the promo, for the shop. This isn't something that ends in 3 months' time or in 6 months' time. This is rooted in the core of our program as we deliver it to South Africa.
Focusing on delivering service and exceptional value to South Africans, strong start to the first half of the year. We wish you the best of luck for the second 6 months. We look forward to catching up at the end of the year. Thank you so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Dis-Chem Pharmacies Limited, Rui Moresh, for joining us to take a look at their interim results for the first 6 months and what lies ahead.
I think it's time for an adventure. We could visit the grandkids, check on the London apartment while we're there. Or we could meet them in Dubai and look at properties along the way.
Ah, why settle in one place when you can be a global citizen? If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect your global banking, lending and investments on a single platform. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. And we continue to celebrate that 130 years of commitment with the team at SAB. But we're going to be taking a look at the responsible side of the business. I'm joined on the line by the Vice President for Corporate Affairs at SAB, Zoleka Lisa, to take a look at some of SAB's responsible initiatives of late. Zoleka, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. A company like SAB that has the history that SAB has over the years put a lot of products into the market. How do you continue to maintain that 130 years later, understanding that for the industry you operate in, responsibility comes first above everything else?
Good evening, Jimmy, and thank you very much for having me. Indeed, this is our 130th year. And when we think of that heritage, it's not just the quality products that we brew, but it's with a very detailed and unwavering commitment to responsibility. And when we talk about our approach to responsibility and the products we put into the market, we look at them with three lenses. We look at a programmatic approach in driving responsibility, at a product approach, and at a partnerships. We have a program called SAB Shop that looks at responsible driving, responsible trading, and responsible communication. From a product perspective, we've been very deliberate in leaning into consumer insights and understanding what our consumers want to ensure that we are innovating with the right products. And lastly, ensuring that we're finding partners who share our values in order to have scalable, impactful, and measurable solutions that tackle the harmful consumption of alcohol in our country.
Now, Zoleka, we do know the harmful effects of alcohol, and we do know the importance of consuming alcohol responsibly. Let's take a look at last week's event. The Cheers to Responsibility event from SA Breweries is one of the flagship events that SA Breweries puts together to encourage responsible consumption. Can you just take us through just the role of that in communities and the importance of having these conversations with communities on an ongoing basis?
Indeed, Jimmy, it was a very important platform that we had and an important conversation. We invited a range of stakeholders across regulators, media, civil society and the like to our Shamdor Brewery on the West Rand, which is our home of innovation. And as part of that process, we wanted these stakeholders to really understand the process which we follow in terms of brewing our non-alcoholic products and the insights that drive that category. And I think it's a big part of the solution that we see in tackling harmful consumption is creating and innovating what we call balanced choices. So we had the conversation, we saw how these products are made. The audience had and the stakeholders there had an opportunity to taste and ask questions. And effectively, we really want to ensure that we're starting to drive advocacy around people understanding what we call the non-alc portfolio opportunity.
So, like, let's dig into that non-alcoholic portfolio of SABs. I mean, to be a company that has 130-year heritage and legacy, to have the South African breweries family be able to brag about owning the largest brewery on the African continent, this is something that many might not think makes sense for you. But take us through the innovation that goes into things like non-alcoholic beverages and catering for that market segment.
So SAB, I think, was one of the first on the continent to introduce non-alcoholic beers at scale in South Africa. In 2017, we introduced Castle Free. More recently, we followed with brands like Corona Zero. And there's a new kid on the block with Brutal Fruit. And this requires that we make investments into the technology and the breweries are optimized as such to create these products. We have to really accelerate innovation. The trends are moving, the way we make the products is moving, and we have to ensure that we are ready as a brewery. We are scaling up the insights team and the consumer teams to ensure that we're understanding what our consumers want. And then we're working with our marketing teams to really, really spread the message that there are alternatives and there are balanced choices. So there's a huge investment. I think in the last 4 or 5 years, we've invested roughly 20 billion rands into our breweries to drive some of these innovations.
Zoleka, do you have a favorite non-alcoholic beverage?
I enjoy a range of them. I would say I'm really looking forward to Brutal Fruit, which is the newest version, Brutal Fruit Zero. It's my favorite non-alc. The brand is great. The liquid is refreshing. And yeah, so it's where I'm at the moment.
And would you encourage individuals out there to try the non-alcoholic range, not from a brand perspective, not from a sales perspective, but just so that they can get a sense of the innovation that's gone into creating that product and the responsibility that comes with it?
Two things, Jimmy. I think I would encourage people to understand the trend. We are really looking to offer people choices. Non-alcoholic innovation is really about giving people choices. That's their lifestyle. So people should understand what those choices are and what's driving them. And then I think be open to try. And there's a range across the different categories of alcohol. And it's really now a growing trend that we're seeing, especially among some of the new entrants into the legal drinking age. And I think it's a positive trend to allow responsible consumption into the future.
Cheers to responsibility and to safeguarding the future of South Africa. And cheers to 130 years of South African breweries. Here's to 130 more. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Vice President for Corporate Affairs at SAB, Zoleka Lisa, for joining us to take a look at the responsible products and the innovative responsibility that's gone into SAB over the last 130 years. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation, for 130 years and forever. SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply. And of course it is SME of the Week. This week's small business is a business called Evelectric. Quite an interesting name and quite an interesting business. We're going to find out more around what it is that they offer with the company's co-founder and CEO, Ndiya Magadagela. She joins me on the line now to see what we make of their business. Ndiya, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about Evelectric.
Thanks for having me. So Evelectric is an electric vehicle leasing business. So we are a B2B business. We provide electric vehicles, charging infrastructure, as well as anything that a fleet owner would need to run their business. Just taking the headache out of the adoption of electric vehicles in fleets.
Ndiya, I think I might have seen one of your vehicles, if I'm not wrong. I think I've seen one of them on the roads, and it's branded on the side and says this is an electric vehicle. Tell us why you went into the commercial side of electric. We've seen that there's been an adoption of electric vehicles at a retail level, at a consumer level. Why then shift into the fleet management and the commercial side from there?
You know, what we believe and what we've seen in other countries where there's been a mass adoption of electric vehicles is that it should be driven by fleets or even public transportation. So any sector of the market that is doing sort of a predetermined amount of kilometers. And the reason why I say that is because based on public transportation or fleets, that's how a country can build the infrastructure to then support you and I, the consumer, when we go electric, because what is needed for the adoption to happen is really quite a huge rollout of infrastructure. So that is why we went with the B2B model, or rather the fleet model. The other thing that really makes fleet electrification a lot more possible than it would be to convince just, you know, anybody who drives a vehicle is that a lot of corporates have made ESG commitments. They would like to go green by year X, Y, and Z. And so if you introduce this to them, indeed you help them reach that mandate and that goal. But not only that, they save money while doing it.
Now, Ndiya, you've taken quite an interesting business model from how you've approached the corporate side of it. You offer electric vehicles as a service, and you've just touched on the importance of infrastructure and the importance of having that infrastructure readily available. How do you balance that? Because if you're offering it as a service, I imagine that means then that you offer the infrastructure behind it as well, and you're supporting the businesses. Tell us about how it is that your business model works.
Correct. So indeed, you're very right. We provide the vehicle, we provide the charging infrastructure, we provide the charge management behind, you know, the vehicle, so that our clients are able to do the deliveries as they used to. And you're asking about infrastructure and how important that is. There are a couple of questions that when you approach a business or a fleet owner that they will ask you about going electric. Firstly, it will be the cost of the vehicle, and then they will say, how long will this vehicle last me? How and what about battery degradation? Where am I going to charge? So those are the questions that are slowing down adoption. So by bringing it to a client as a service, you then say, I'm taking the risk for this vehicle. You can use it for 5 years. I'm going to ensure that your vehicle is fully charged every day. I'm going to tell your driver where to charge and what time to charge, so that you are able to do your deliveries without the headache of worrying about all of those questions that you asked before you could transition. And that is really why we do electric vehicles as a service.
You've basically taken all of the decision-making away from the business and just made it an easy yes. So, Ndia, then, where do you find a pain point at the moment? I mean, we know adoption can be slow. As a business, how are you finding the market that you're operating in, number one, and what are you seeing are still perhaps some of the pain points that clients are experiencing?
You know, I think the pain point and to a lesser extent now than when we started 5 years ago, and I'll tell you why it's getting better and better. It was always those questions that I said that a fleet user, a prospective electric vehicle user would ask about the vehicle. How long can this run? What is my range? Range anxiety at the time of load shedding, there were those questions. So there were a lot of questions about that. And then we started, we ran a proof of concept. And currently we've run 9 million kilometers in electric vehicles. We are saving our clients 1 ton of carbon emissions per vehicle per month. And also we've had 100% operational uptime. So the thing that was the pain point, and at some point this business was just a PowerPoint presentation and an Excel spreadsheet, we can now then say, we are 5 years into this business. We've done 9 million kilometers. This is what our clients are saying, and this is how much they are saving. And then the conversation becomes easier. So I suppose the pain point is to get that message to our prospective clients that in actual fact, all your worries are taken care of, and we've got the track record, and we've shown that we can do it for the last 5 years.
So, Ndia, let's tell the prospective clients how to get hold of you. Let's tell them where they can reach the EvElectric team. How do people get in touch with you? What are the website details? What are the contact details? How do people reach you?
So they can reach us on our website. It's evelectric.co.za. We are also on LinkedIn as EvElectric. My email address, ndia@evelectric.co.za. There's various ways where they can get in touch with us. And I think most importantly, we will look at their entire fleet. We will not convince them to take routes that are not efficient or where they're not going to save money. We're going to treat this as a consulting project. We're going to say, here's your fleet in the areas where you are doing 3,000 kilometers and above. Let's take these vehicles electric and let's show you that you can actually save money and also reduce on carbon.
Electrifying fleet management solutions. That is how the team at EvElectric are providing sustainability in the market. I love to see it. I wish you and the team all of the best. Ndia, it's a lovely business model you have. Keep us updated on the successes that you continue to have. And we'll leave the conversation on that note. Co-founder and CEO at EvElectric, Ndia Magadagela, joining us to take a look at her small business and what it is that they're doing to change the world. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP. 46669. T's and C's apply.
It's exactly 7 o'clock, which means Chanduko Legege and the SAFM news team are standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. It also means from my side, good night.